Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
Seth said just previously to the show, isn't it such a wonderful day out in New York? I mean, it's pretty damn miserable out. I mean, in case of everything, it's just really, really bad. And I mean, I get it.
Wow, we haven't had one of those for a while. That was just for all the Ranger fans and the Mighty Duck fans.
Wait a second. That deserves another one.
So are you happy now?
Oh, I am stoked. I have to say, there is nothing more pleasing to an Islander fan other than an Islander win than to see a Ranger loss. And, I mean, look, we talked about it last week. There is one team that every sports fan has that they just want them to lose and lose and lose. And if you are a Washington Redskins fan, you can lose every game of the year. But if you beat the Cowboys, it really doesn't matter. And if you're a Yankee fan, you can lose every game of the year. But if you beat those damn Red Sox, it doesn't really matter. Well, guess what? The Islanders didn't get a chance to beat the Rangers, but the Lightning, oh, I was the biggest Lightning fan of all time, and thank you very much to Tampa Bay. And on to the Stanley Cup Finals we go, with the Tampa Bay Lightning playing the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah, that's not what NBC wanted.
I was going to say, Gary Bettman is not, as usual, not thrilled with the finals matchup. Now, Chicago, possibly in the last year of their dynasty because of salary cap ramifications, although they do have Duncan Keith and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Sharp signed, or Patrick Kane, excuse me, signed, you know, deep into the future. Give me a reason why Tampa can win this matchup.
Oh, I can give you a bunch of reasons why they can. I mean, I don't think
they
will.
Give me a reason why they will.
Okay, why they will? Why they will. Better goaltending play. I think Bishop is a better goaltender than Crawford. I think Crawford's proven it more, but I think in pure talent, I like Bishop over Crawford. I definitely like the defenseman of the Lightning better than I do the defense. Granted, Duncan Keith is probably the best defenseman on the ice, but if you go number 2 through 5, I bet you they're all Lightning players. The Lightning are actually faster than the Blackhawks. Now, Blackhawks are fast. You're right. You do have Patrick Sharp. You did pull Sharp. I don't know where you pulled that from, but you got it right. They do have Patrick Sharp, and they do have Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. But they're also getting older. Marian Hossa only averaging...
He's like 40 years old.
Yeah, averaging 18 minutes a game. Didn't play very much in that double overtime game. You want a reason that Tampa Bay can win this series? They're young. Like, really young. And they have the best goal scorer on the ice, in Steven Stamkos. So, I mean, look, is this what Gary Bettman wanted? No, but can Tampa Bay win this series? Absolutely. I'm picking Chicago in 7.
Well, I mean, the other problem Chicago seems to have is the depth at defense. It's not specifically even the talent flow. The talent is less. It's the depth.
Absolutely.
I believe they're, for all intents and purposes, only playing 4 defensemen.
Yeah. I mean, look, they've lost a lot of defensemen over the last couple of years, including Nick Leddy, who came to the Islanders. because the concept is, in the salary cap era, you can have a couple of high-priced guys, but that's all you can have is a couple. And the cap will go up in the next couple of years, which is definitely gratifying to the Blackhawks, who have a couple of guys that, I mean, Taze and Kane are signed to 10-year deals. Duncan Keith signed to a 12-year deal. Marian Hossa was signed to a 12-year deal under the old cap. So under the old rules, so they have a bunch of salary tied up in these guys where they have to make sacrifices, and they've been making them little bit by little bit. But there was a question today posed to me by a fan of the show, actually. Do you consider...
We have fans?
Yeah, we do. Do you consider the Blackhawks a dynasty? And the reasoning they asked me this question, I asked them further. I was like, you know what? They've made 3 finals in 5 years. That's pretty much dynasty. Why would you say that they wouldn't be? He's like, well, 80% of the team is different from the first to the last. I think it's 6 years, actually. From the first time to the to this time. And when you're a dynasty, doesn't it necessarily mean you have to have the same players? Like, the 80 to 84 Islanders and the mid-80s Oilers and the Celtics from the 50s and 60s, the Lakers from the 1980s, the Bulls from the 90s and 2000s. So I'll ask you, Seth, is a dynasty the team, or is a dynasty the players that make up the team?
In this era, a dynasty is the team. In the non-free agent time, is, you know, when you look back at the Yankees of the late 40s and early 50s, the Yankees of the 50s, from 47 to 52, they were all the same players. You know, I mean, very little turnover. You know, you go to even the Bulls in the early 90s, it was 2 separate teams, but they were, for the most part, the same players on those teams, because the free agent wasn't as prevalent. And, you know, now there is no way you can base a dynasty on players when as you said, by 20%, 30% are going to change over on an annual basis. I think you base it on the team. I don't even think it's a question.
Look, I don't dispute you. In fact, I agree with that wholeheartedly. It is based on the team. But does that make this dynasty any better or worse than, say, those other dynasties, or does it not even matter?
Sorry, just I got distracted for a quick second. Can you repeat the question?
I can repeat the question.
Appreciate
it. David, this is your question. Do you think that the dynasties of today are any better or worse due to the salary cap provisions than they were in the older dynasties that we refer to?
I don't think you can compare them. I don't think they're better or worse. They're just dynasties. I find, you know, how do you compare, you know, in a different era? You look back in the 60s. Do you think that the Celtics would have been able to keep Cousy and Havlicek and Russell and Jones and Muscatoff and Ramsey? It's difficult enough to compare almost decades. It's impossible to compare years. Impossible. Especially over 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. It's too difficult. I compare them just to the era that they're in.
Okay. I mean, look, I don't dispute you. I think that is a very well-founded argument. I know you can thank me now. And you're right. I think you're right. I think comparing eras, look, we try and do it all the time, right? And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think for this comparison, it is a different game. It's a different system. You can't compare the Yankees of yesteryear to the Yankees of today. Well, maybe, you know what? Maybe in baseball you can. I mean, just thinking about it, because baseball doesn't have a salary cap. So is that a good comparison, even with free agency?
No, the free agency makes it too difficult. Because, Do you think that a yogi that? No, you just can't. Yeah, well, they wouldn't have been, the Yankees wouldn't have been able to keep all those great players for so. Well, maybe the Yankees could.
Right,
but it would have been difficult.
You certainly could, right? And the Yankees did. In the 90, even in the 90s, when they had Paul O'Neill, Mariano Rivera, Derek Jeter, yeah, they supplemented, but they still had probably a top three center fielder at the time, a top three shortstop, the top reliever, two of the top 10 pitchers, starting pitchers in the American League at the time, and then I mean, wishy-washy with Cohn in there, too. They were always able to go get their guy. I was putting Pettit and Clemens as two of the top of the 10 time.
Okay.
They always had a David Wells. And they were all, like we said before, they were able to make a mistake. Those the thing about the Yankees that bigger teams such as the Yankees and the Maple Leafs are able to do that no other teams can do is they can make a high-priced mistake. So the Yankees were able to do that.
Did you just put the Maple Leafs, potentially the worst team in the NHL that haven't won a championship since 1967, in the same sentence as the most winning franchise of the last millennium, of the last century?
I did it for a reason, because this past year, the Maple Leafs made, 2 years ago, the Maple Leafs signed one of the guys from your team, the Devils, David Clarkson, to a 5-year, $35 million contract, right? 2 years later, that team, the Maple Leafs, are not playing David Clarkson at all. They benched him. And they have 4 more years left on this lovely contract. So what do? They go to Columbus. He says, hey, Columbus, you guys got a guy that you're paying in Nathan Horton on the injured list. Can't use him, but you still got to pay him. We'll trade you David Clarkson, who we're paying but sitting, for your guy, Nathan Horton, who actually has a bigger contract, but we can put him on the long-term injury list so he's not on our cap. So we're still going to pay the guy. It's called having the money, having the resources. I'm not saying they do it well, but they do. They are the top two teams as far as dollars and cents in their respective sports.
Well, let me ask. Well, first of all, hockey does have a salary cap.
Yes, but they also have carve outs. They have ways around the salary cap. So yes, they do, but there are exclusions. Continue.
Sorry, I just lost my train of thought again. Sorry, everybody. It's been a long day. I just completely lost my train of thought.
Really?
And I was doing so well in this discussion.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
What the hell was that? Okay, I'm already tired of that. But what was that?
You can't pull this? Hold on a second. Really? You can't get this?
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye!
Oh! That is Billy Crystal and Carol Kane from The Princess Bride.
Correct. Wow, there you go. Just for those that would like to call in, 760-283-0846, we have Todd Strauber to discuss a little bit about FIFA. And, you know, FIFA, we're going to talk with Todd in a second. We'll bring him on right now. And FIFA has all sorts of problems, as far as I'm concerned. Last week, we saw that it seemed like their whole infrastructure was completely convicted, at least in public opinion, of bribery, embezzlement, just about every other white-collar crime you could probably think of that involves money, bribery, again. And then they had the opportunity to wipe their slate clean by electing a president. But what do? They just elect the same guy again. Now, Todd Schrauber, a Back Sports Page soccer expert. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. How's it going?
Going well.
Going well.
You know, your sport is kind of making, I don't know, George Steinbrenner look good right now.
Yeah, well, I know. It's a tough one, these guys. I mean, it's something that's been going on for years. And I think it's something that, you know, a lot of people within the sport knew that it was going on. And it's just a matter of, you know, how could they pin it on them? And, you know, they figured out a way. Anytime the grand jury serves an indictment, their success rate in conviction is right around 98%. We had our legal analyst come on our show the other day from the Touchdown in Seattle, and he's a guy that used to work at the Department of Justice, and he said if they've gone this far, then they've got a lot on them. And really, you know, you just mentioned the re-election of Sepp Blatter, which is shocking, as you said. It's just unbelievable. It's his fifth term. And, you know, I think that they, you know, they've arrested 14 guys. They're definitely trying to get those guys to roll on Sepp Blatter. But, you know, for Sepp Blatter, he says he has no idea what's going on. I mean, he either knows it was going on and he was in on it, which is bad, or he's running this organization and it's going on underneath him and he doesn't know, which is even worse, in my opinion. So, yeah, it's a tough one with FIFA right now. And they just came out with some more news here earlier today. One of their high officials, Sepp Blatter's closest confidant within the organization, made a $10 million payment to Jack Warner, the head of CONCACAF, who's one of the guys that's been arrested. So things just keep coming out. I think this is going to get a lot worse before it gets better, guys.
Well, Todd, first of all, good. It's been a long time, so it's good to talk to you again. But
yeah.
Did you see Jack Warner, his when he was trying to respond to the criticism, and he used an article from The Onion?
Yeah, unbelievable. And realizing, yeah, I know. It's comical. I mean, it really is comical. Also, Jack Warner was arrested in Trinidad and then all of a sudden had to leave the jail by ambulance because he was suffering from exhaustion, and then 3 hours later was posting Twitter pictures of himself dancing in, like, some office. So this guy, it's a tough one with him. I mean, you know, he was kicked out of FIFA already in 2011 for another bribery scandal. So, you know, he was well known to have sold his country's vote to South Africa for the 2010 World Cup. And, you know, really a lot of this money and a lot of this stuff that's, you know, people are buying votes because it's obviously huge for the economics of these countries to win the World Cup. So for Russia, Qatar, you know, a lot of what's going on right now is the Swiss are investigating those World Cup bids. There's no question in anybody's mind that both of those World Cup bids were bought at some point, because the Russian one beat out England, which doesn't make sense, and the Qatar one beat out the U.S., which makes zero sense. So there was a lot of money being, you know, transferred somewhere. That I have a feeling we're going to find out where and who that was in the next year, guys.
Well, I've heard some stories that the president, the guy that was just reelected, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name right now.
Sepp Blatter.
Sepp Blatter.
He was actually a good choice because he took out, granted, yes, he took money. I understand that. But he also spread the World Cups around. Now, granted, he did it probably because he was paid some. But doesn't it make more of an international flavor in the fact that the World Cups were spread around the countries? I mean, look, Qatar probably could not have gotten one if they didn't pay. I mean, you're kind of that ilk, right? So does it make the game a little bit more international? I'm not saying he did a good job by accepting bribes, but let's look at the outcomes rather than the way it was done.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be dead honest, Sepp Blatter has done a lot of good for FIFA. I mean, when he took over, I mean, it was like 1924, keep in mind, it was so long ago, but, you know, he has done a lot of good things for the organization. I think a lot of it with the World Cups comes down to, is the country prepared to host it and put on a quality event? Part of the problem, obviously, in Qatar is 110 degrees in the summer. So already, they're now having to move that 2022 World Cup to November, December, which then in turn upsets all the leagues. So the Premier League, the Spanish La Liga, the German Bundesliga, that's right in the middle of their season. So then all their best players are gone. It just doesn't work. So it's, I think a lot of it in terms of, you know, the Russian bid and the Qatari bid was more about are those countries really prepared to host these? And most people thought no, but, you know, somehow it happened. And especially the Qatari one was a big shock, I think. So, you know, like I said, the Swiss, there's two different investigations going on right now, guys. And the reason that the United States is even involved in this is because most of what has gone on with the money laundering and the wire fraud that these guys are getting charged with, CONCACAF's offices are in Miami. And a lot of the CONCACAF is the branch of FIFA that uncovers North America, all the Caribbean islands. And that's what the United States falls under. So their office is there. A lot of this money went through U.S. banks. A lot of the illegal money went through U.S. banks. And a lot of it had to do with media rights, marketing rights, and TV rights with a company called Traffic Sports. And Traffic Sports, their owner has already pleaded guilty and rolled. That's how these 14 guys have now been nicked. There's another guy, Charles Blazer. He's also been convicted and rolled. That's also how they're getting these 14 guys have now been arrested. So the Justice Department has already got guys to roll over. More information is coming for sure, I think, on this.
Well, I mean, you brought up Charles Blazer, and there was an article actually in the New York Daily News about him that Richard Deutsch mentioned in Sports Illustrated. If you can find it, I would advise anyone to read it. It's fascinating. Guy probably wouldn't know a soccer ball if it hit him in the head, but extraordinarily charismatic and was really able to be extremely successful in what he did until he was arrested a short time ago, now facing huge health issues in addition to, well, jail time. Realistically, right. Even if something comes, if these charges, you know, go forward and the bribery is established, what are the odds? Especially, I found it extremely doubtful that Russia, under any circumstance, would relinquish the cup in 18.
No,
is there a reasonable? Do you think it's reasonable that either that in Qatar that they could, or that Qatar would in 22?
The only way that's going to happen, the only way that could potentially happen, is if something comes out about Sepp Blatter and the presidency is taken away from him. That's the only way that's going to happen, because he's already come out and stated that, you know, he's going to keep both the World Cups there and that it's not going to, you know, they're not going to change that. So many people want those World Cups revoted. And, you know, who's to say that they're not going to be voted in again? Maybe they would. I don't know that. But I can tell you this. The whole story is extremely fascinating. These guys broke into this Swiss hotel where all these guys were. It was like Dog the Bounty Hunter, man, at 6:30 in the morning. They busted the doors down, arrested these guys. Imagine in our country if the guys running the NFL and the NBA and all of these guys, you know, were all of a sudden arrested in a hotel at 6:30 in the morning. It would be a massive, huge story. And, you know, what's happened is extraordinary, and I think what's going to keep coming out is going to be even more extraordinary.
But where do we go from here? Where is the reform going to come from? I mean, this has been business as usual for so long that does that mean that there'll be only be one, maybe two places where the World Cup will be hosted from now on? Because it seems like that was the only way that these countries were getting anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to reform an organization that is quote unquote nonprofit. They don't have to disclose and won't disclose where any of their money goes and who gets paid what. I mean, nobody knows anything. They won't disclose it. So I think reform will be tough as long as Sepp Blatter is there. But I will know that now all the eyes are on them, and they're not going to be able to pull anything that they've been pulling. So I think that, you know, just naturally things will change a little bit just because they're not going to be able to get away with what they haven't been forever.
So if you had to give me odds, hold on one second, Seth. If you had to give me odds on Seth Blatter being the FIFA president a year from today, what would your odds be?
I would say a year from today, I'm going to say that I'll bet that it's probably 75% he still is. My guess is if and when they build this case on Sepp Blatter, it's going to have to be pretty airtight. I'm meaning they, the Justice Department. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, that it's going to take them a while. I mean, this investigation in itself, so it has taken many years. So when Chuck Blazer was first arrested, basically, when they got him the role, the first time that he put a wire on was at the 2012 London Olympics. And the FBI had him set up meetings with numerous officials that he had done dirty deals with. He had like a James Bond style keychain with a mic in it that he put on the table, and they recorded every conversation. That's part of how they've got these 14 guys. That's 2 years ago when that process started, though. So I have a feeling this is going to be a lengthy process, you know. And as we know, the U.S. legal system is a lengthy process no matter what. So I think it's going to be a while.
I actually want to talk, since we so rarely get to talk soccer on the show because one of us is a bigger fan, let's say, than the other.
I know nothing about soccer. That's why we don't really discuss it on the show. Perfectly
okay. Fair enough.
Go ahead.
Fair enough. We do have the Women's World Cup coming up starting, I guess, in the next 2 weeks. And
starting Saturday.
Starting Saturday. And I know you actually know some of the players on the U.S. women's team. As opposed to prior years, the U.S. doesn't seem to be the favorite that they have been in the past. Teams like Canada are better, France is better, Germany and Brazil are always threats. Is the U.S. the favorite going into this?
I think they are one of the teams in the conversation. Obviously, they've got some very dynamic, special players, but. I mean, you're right. There's a lot. I mean, the parity in women's soccer has grown so much in the last 20 years. It's really astonishing. Where on my training complex is for the club that I run, we had China, the Chinese team, training there for the last 3 weeks. They just left a couple days ago. And a couple of our teams got to play some training matches against them. I mean, these women are unbelievable, man. I mean, the technical ability of these girls and how quick and the pace they play, I mean, we put together a team of our U-17, U-18 boys, and they smashed them 4-2, and they ran right over them. So, the level in the rest of the world has really grown, and I think that the U.S. is definitely in the conversation, but you've got some other teams in there as well. So, you know, Sweden is always difficult. You mentioned Germany. You mentioned Brazil. And the Japanese team is very good as well. So, I think it's going to be a great tournament in Canada. A lot of the games are going to be real close to us up in Vancouver, BC. And I know a lot of people that have kind of been in on the organization, they say that they're ready to really put on a great event up there. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be good.
Well, the Japanese beat the U.S. 4 years ago in the championship in a game the U.S. dominated, but hit about four or five posts, if I remember correctly. Well, you talked about Sweden. The coach from Sweden, I believe, is the ex-U.S. coach who went back. Is it Pia Sundridge?
Something along those names.
The big names when I think of the U.S., Abby Wambach, who's been around forever, Alex mm-hmm. Morgan, Sidney LaRue. I mean, Hope Solo to a lesser degree. You know, who are the names that we should be looking out for that aren't quite
well-known? Yeah, I think that, I think that obviously you've got Hope Solo, who still, despite, the negative attention that she's got a little bit off the field, she's still the best women's goalkeeper in the world. She is. So you've got her. She's very good. Abby Wambach is still, she's still one of the top strikers in the world. I mean, this will be her last World Cup, no question. But, you know, she's definitely a player that's still so good in the air. And it's just on the female side, it's just such a big deal to have a girl that's that good in the air is such a big deal. But Sidney LaRue, I got a chance to see her play here, with the rain here. She's another player that's very dangerous. She scored a ton of goals. for the national team, you know. So, but you do have some young girls coming up. Tobin Heath is a very good player, plays in Portland. You know, you've got Allie Krieger is a very good player as well. Carly Lloyd plays in Houston, is a good player. So, you know, there really is a lot of really good younger girls coming up. But another name that I think is going to have a great World Cup, and I've had the chance to watch her play here for a couple of years, is Megan Rapinoe. She plays here in Seattle, played her college soccer at University of Portland, but she's a very good player, and she's had a great kind of year and a half leading up to this World Cup, and I think that she's gonna be a player that does very well in this tournament. So,
okay, some more quick questions on it. 99, they win the cup. And this is the team of Mia Hamm, the Brandi Chastain, you know, penalty kick, Brianna Scurry, yep, the goalie, and it pretty much brings in a new era of women's soccer. Makes women's soccer really prevalent in my mind for the first time.
Yeah.
16 years later, the popularity seems in a lot of ways, at least domestically, to have stagnated. Do you think a U.S. victory would reignite that, or do I just see it from a New York East Coast bias view where it's just not the sport, you know, had the initial takeoff and just never really got past that point?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it did take off, obviously, but, you know, a couple of failed women's pro leagues. You know, now they've obviously got the new league that they've got that's been around for a couple of years, and it's kind of been growing. But you don't feel the buzz for this World Cup, or this Women's World Cup, that you felt in the past, I don't think. And, you know, I think that, obviously, I think a win would help. But, you know, I think for when you have these fringe, like it's a fringe sport, let's say, women's soccer, and then you have, you know, your star player Hope Solo with bad press, I don't think that's good for the sport in general, you know. So, you know, you need somebody like an Alex Morgan, who obviously is a real popular player, you know, good-looking girl, so she's, you know, she's doing a lot of commercials. You know, you need her to have a really good tournament, put the team on her back, you know, a player like that everybody can get behind, you know. And I think that, yeah, I think that it could help the popularity come back. I mean, you know, the last Men's World Cup was the biggest World Cup that I've seen in our country in terms of non-soccer people paying attention. And so, you know, we'll see in the next month and a half if that carries over to this Women's World Cup.
Two last quick questions. And Todd, you know, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries.
What is your final four? And who wins?
Final four?
Your semis and your final.
I'm gonna go US. I'm gonna go Japan. I'm gonna go Sweden. And I'm gonna go a little dark horse, little sleeper, China, just because I've been watching him train for the last 3 weeks. So I'm gonna throw China in there as well. So I would say those four.
Well, Todd, let me ask you this. So each World Cup, we have somebody that breaks out. We have somebody that the world knows. They're on the cover of Sports Illustrated, Alex Morgan, Brandi Chastain, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Who is the woman in this World Cup that's going to do that?
Yeah, I think that's going to be Megan Rapinoe. I really do. I think she's going to have a great tournament. She's a really dangerous player, scores a ton of goals, and, you know, she's had a ton of success playing over in Europe in the club system over there. She was in France before she came back to play for the Seattle Reign, and she's a very good player. I think she's going to be the one.
All right. We're going to let you go on this question. We're going actually off of World Cup, off of very simple. Champions League final, Barca or Juventus?
Man, I'll tell you what, Barca is unstoppable right now. I really like Juventus. Andres Pirlo is amazing. They're top player. I guess 35 years old and he's still killing it. But what Neymar and Messi and Suarez are doing for Barcelona right now cannot be touched. It can't be stopped. They're going to win the game. I mean, it's just... I don't know if you caught Messi's goal from this last weekend in the Copa del Rey.
I did.
But it was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It, It was his best goal ever, and that's saying a lot. I mean, it's saying a lot. It was unbelievable. This guy's on a different planet right now, and I think it's fair to say that, you know, it's funny because right now, you know, we have the LeBron-Michael Jordan conversation kind of getting ramped up. If LeBron does this, if he wins this final, you know, is he going to be in the same conversation as Jordan? Well, Messi right now is jumping right over Pele's head and going right past him. I mean, he's going into a whole other element right now as a player. So there's no question in my mind Barcelona's going to win.
Oh, we'll discuss that when Argentina wins the cup in I guess it'd be 18. But
I agree. That's his next step, and that's going to be the next one. He's got to do that in order to really be there.
Todd, when is your next show on Back Sports Page? Do you know? Is it on Saturday or?
On the Touchline in Seattle is on every Friday morning, 9 a.m. And we'll be back on. Aaron Heinzen and I got a great show coming up this week with Laura Harvey, who is the Seattle Reign women's coach, coming on to talk Women's World Cup. And we've got former U.S. men's national team goalkeeper Marcus Hanneman, who played in the Premier League for 12 years. He's coming on to talk about the English transfer sagas that are going on right now. A lot of movement of players going on in England right now. So it could be a good show.
All right. Check it out. If you haven't heard Todd's show, it is probably outside of ours, I'll be honest, because I'm a fan of ours. It is a great show, and what is certainly worth listening to both off of iTunes or live if you can. Todd, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one. Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Todd Strauber, backsportspage.com. Again, catch his show on Fridays, 9 a.m. here or on iTunes. So he brought up an interesting point, and we're going to have to touch upon this because here we are. Game one of the NBA Finals is coming up. LeBron James, you can make the case, Seth, that LeBron James has less talent on his team than Tom Brady had on any of his teams right now. And if he wins the title, is he finally jumping Jordan for you?
No.
Ah.
He can't. Going to Miami precludes him from ever jumping Jordan, in my mind.
You do realize Jordan had the same talent that LeBron went to Miami for.
No, Miami had more. Jordan had a top 10 sidekick in Pippen. Miami had a top 10 sidekick in Wade. And they also had an all-pro center in Chris Bosh. And Horace Grant was a nice play.
All time.
You will never get me away from this discussion, from this argument. And this was, I argued this on Facebook, and I hold to this. I don't blame, you know, in retrospect, do I blame him for going? No. Do I still have the same strong feeling about it that I did 5 years ago, 4 years ago, whenever it was? I don't. Does it preclude me, you know, jumping to play with your biggest rival at a given position preclude me from putting him in the top two of all time? Yes, it does. It does. I can't get past that.
Even if he wins this title, even if he wins this title with his best player being a one-footed Kyrie Irving, or basically the equivalent of Rodman without all the defensive play in Tristan Thompson or J.R. Smith. I mean,
I cannot.
You understand this is the same as Jordan winning in 1985 when he started scoring 63 points a game? When I'm going to go look up what his roster was. Jordan, 1985 Bulls. So his roster in 1985 was Charles Oakley. The starting five was John Paxson, Orlando Woolridge, Charles Oakley, Sidney Green.
Okay. Now, let's take a step back here. Before we make that point, the 86 Bulls you're talking about, correct? Not 85, I think it was the 86.
Bulls, yep.
Now, let's look at what the Eastern Conference was at this point.
you had possibly the greatest team of all time in the Boston Celtics. You had a team about 2 years, the Milwaukee Bucks, who were kind of coming off of a prime where they, in another era, they would have been a title contender. You had the Pistons, who were a year or two away from being a title contender, but very, very good. You had a better, it was a much, you look at what, who exactly did the Cavs beat? They beat the Celtics, who have nobody except the coach. Their best player is Isaiah Thomas. They beat the Bulls, who haven't been healthy in 5 years and didn't play well together. And that was proven by the fact that Tom Thibodeau, who's a top coach, was thrown out on his ass a week afterwards.
Oh, that didn't
and against
just,
Atlanta. And
that wasn't just.
That was an accumulation of things. I agree. Short of them winning a title, he would have been out. And against an Atlanta team, which has looked awful for the last 2.5 months, they've beaten nobody. Now, I give them props for getting here, and I take nothing away from LeBron James being the best player in the world and probably will go down as one of the top five players in my mind of all time. I just can't put him in the top two.
Wait. But I'm saying they win this series.
I don't care.
And don't tell me they haven't beaten anybody. If they beat Golden State,
it is an extraordinarily impressive thing for LeBron, and he jumps up higher in everybody's echelon. But look at who the top two are. The best center of all time, who won the 11 out of 13 championships, and pretty much the best basketball player any of us have ever seen. It's not like I'm saying, hey, I'm putting him above Karl Malone. I'm not putting him in the top two.
Well, I think he's already above Russell. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay.
Because for the same reason that we talked about before, about free agents.
Comparison of yours. Okay.
Because Russell played with, what, 8 teams? 9 teams? 10 teams? I mean, there weren't a whole lot of teams back then.
And you mean in the league? There were 16 teams, I believe.
Yeah, and there was nobody going anywhere, right? I mean, you were on that team, you were staying on that team. That was it.
No. Well, Chamberlain was traded several times.
I mean, if you wanted
was traded, the Busher was traded. I mean, there were trades made.
The Busher was
Lenny
traded.
Lenny Wilkins, who was on our show last week, was traded.
Yeah, but you're talking well after where I am. I'm talking about in the 50s. These guys weren't traded in the 50s.
Russell graduated after winning his second title in 56, I believe. And he played through 1969. He played 13 years and won 11 championships. So, I don't think the 60s is unreasonable. 60s was his prime.
He played 56 through 69. You're absolutely right. So it's his prime was probably when he was 25, give or take, right? So,
yeah, somewhere in 61, 62, 63, that range. Well,
that
whatever
team,
you want to put.
That team had Bob Cousy, who stayed on the team forever. Tom Heinsohn.
Yeah, but Bob Cousy was past his prime by that point because Bob Cousy was past his prime by the early 60s. But yes.
That was his ninth year. Tom Heinsohn, Hall of Famer. In his third year. Casey Jones in his first year. Sam Jones in his second year. Bill Sharman in his ninth year. So let's go like two more years, right? Because I get what you're saying. By the way, all those guys were on the team 2 years later, too.
As was John Havlicek.
No, so 2 years later, Havlicek hadn't come on yet. Then you had Tom Sanders.
I thought he joined in 62.
Maybe 62.
What year you look? I don't know what year you're looking at. That was hard for me to do.
Yeah, you're right. He came in 62. I was looking at 61, 62. He came in 62, 63. You're absolutely correct. So I guess
the only 2 years that I believe Russell lost Russell lost in, I think, his second year to the Hawks in a game seven where I think Pettit put down about 50. And he lost in the 66-67 team, which was Chamberlain's great team, where he led the league in assists. He was the best player on a team that won 11 championships in 13 years. No matter what your competition is, that is utterly insane. And he changed how basketball was played. Again, it's hard for me to gauge. I didn't see him. But based on what I know, would I put him as number one? Yes. You know, remember, LeBron also, you know, we look at LeBron now. LeBron, for all intents and purposes, tanked his last series in Cleveland. Now, whether that has anything to do with stuff that's beyond the scope of this radio show is a whole other discussion. LeBron has lost four finals. Not saying that they're all his fault, obviously. He played like a demon in the last one against San Antonio. He was outclassed. But were they outclassed? You know, when he played against, when he was with Cleveland, now it was probably in his prime when they lost to San Antonio. And the second best player, for the love of God, was Boobie Gibson. That is an incredible accomplishment to get that far. But remember how weak the East has been. But when you lose to Dallas, that team, that Miami team was stacked. And got overconfident. Now, if he loses this, I may be off, but he's lost three championships already, correct?
Yeah.
Three or four?
I think it's three, but I guess the point that I would make is he really didn't belong in two of them.
He did not belong in the one against the Spurs the first time in 05, or 07, I guess it was. I agree. An incredible personal effort to get that far.
He probably didn't belong in the one last year either.
Who is better? Indiana wasn't playing well by that point.
I'm just saying he probably didn't belong there. That's all. I mean,
if you make the championship interleague, you do the top 16 teams, and I'm not proing or conning. It's a discussion for another day. And he makes it. That's one thing. But you play with the hand that's dealt you. The East has been horrendous for a decade, for the most part. Call it what it is. What was the last dominant East team outside of the Heat? And what have been really good secondary teams?
Look, I get what you're saying. I totally understand what you're saying. We make the case all the time, or you make the case all the time, that Tom Brady is the best quarterback in the NFL. NFL history. He's lost just as many championships. He's done it with, and your case over him, over Peyton Manning, is that he has less talent. I'm just parlaying that into an NBA discussion where I believe that if LeBron James wins this championship, he has less talent than Tom Brady ever did on his team, and he's winning a championship over, look, you said it yourself, the Giants were not a great team, but he lost to them. They were on a good run both times.
I have more, it's easier for me to walk away from that, from a football, because it's a one game anomaly. Anything can happen in a one game. You know, we say that about the NCAA tournament all the time. You know, one game, anything can happen. In a seven-game series, very rarely does anything happen. I mean, how many real major upsets have you seen in the NBA Finals? There have been a few in our lifetime. I mean, Dallas, Detroit sweeping the Lakers, I think, in 04 was a stunning upset. Or was a pretty big upset. What other real upsets do you see at the NBA final level?
You can't make the case the Spurs beating the Heat was an upset?
A stunning one? No.
The way that
surprising?
They beat them? No,
no. That's not what I said. I didn't say the way they beat them. I said that they beat them.
Okay.
I mean, Dallas beating Miami, an upset? Yeah, maybe. I mean, I would think so. But not a shocking upset. You know, you don't see that in seven-game series very often. You see it more in baseball. You know, 90 Reds beating the Bash Brothers. You have more of a stunning upset. You know, I don't see that in the NBA very often.
Okay. Well, with that, let me put it this way. If the Cavs beat the Warriors, would you? I think I'd qualify that as an upset.
It's an upset. It's not a stunning one.
Seriously? With the talent...
You would be stunned if Cleveland won the series?
I would, because if you put these players on a map, right, and you put the top 10 players in this series, are 8 of them Warriors?
Probably.
Maybe 9?
No.
Well,
Kyrie should be okay.
Not 100%.
No, but either is Klay Thompson. And you're also dealing with it's a little different. What's so shocking to me about Detroit in 2004 is they beat a Laker team where the best players have been there. You know, no one from Golden State, I don't think, has ever been to a conference final. You know, I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, been in an NBA final, have any of them ever been to a conference final? Forget, you know, Klay hasn't, you know, Curry hasn't, Bogut hasn't, you know, Barnes hasn't, Draymond Green hasn't, Iguodala, I don't think has. So, I mean, there's no, David Lee certainly hasn't, because God knows when the Knicks were relevant last. So, I mean, you know, teams get flustered under red lights. I'm not saying I think Golden State wins the series. I think they win in 6. I think it's a competitive series. I think LeBron is phenomenal. The other thing, I've never denied his talent. And what I love watching him play is he gets better. He finds something to work on and he gets better at it. And I take nothing away from that. But there has, in my mind, you never saw any ramification with what he did.
No.
I did. We argued this forever. And there's no need to argue it again. But, you know, I respect that. Look, he went 4 years, he goes to 4 championships, he wins 2 titles, he wins another MVP or two. He's the best player in basketball. He has been the best player in basketball that we've seen since the prime of Jordan, Bird, Magic. Whether he's better than them, he's better than Magic. And Magic was my favorite, so it's kind of hard for me to swallow, but he was. He's just a better scorer. And a lot of his game, I actually find his game more similar to Magic than I do to any of the others. But he's not the clutch player that Bird was, because nobody was. Bird was as clutch a player as anyone we've ever seen. But Bird played with such extraordinary talent that it's difficult to kind of put him at that level, because you had 5 other Hall of Famers in their primes playing with him. And I don't put him above Jordan is not really an extraordinary detriment. Because there's nobody I put above Jordan, because I think Jordan's the greatest player I've ever seen. You know, I don't know if LeBron ends up number 3 or number 5 or number 7. I don't know. I don't need to think about that. And maybe he wins 4 championships with Cleveland, and I just kind of have to say, look, you know, he's so far above and beyond that I can't make my argument just doesn't hold water anymore. And maybe it doesn't hold water now. But I still think there has to be some negative for what he did. I do.
Okay. I totally get what you're saying.
And you know, I mean, I've been consistent with this. This is not
You have been consistent with this. Okay.
No. The defense is wrong. Are you sure? I'm positive. How could you be so sure?
Exactly. How could you be so sure? Does the defense's case hold?
Yes, right, ladies and gentlemen, you come here to listen to sports. You hear The Princess Bride and the movie about the two youths.
Two youths.
Did he say youths?
So we got about 5 minutes left. I'd like to touch on a couple of things before we go.
Well, who are you picking for the championship to win?
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Warriors in seven. I'd really like the Cavs to win, but I think the Warriors just have, like I said before.
Now, do you want the Cavs to win so you can just continue your argument against me?
No. I want the Cavs to win so people give LeBron the credit he deserves, because
you don't think he's getting it?
No, I don't. I really don't. I really don't think he gets the credit as to how really good he is. I mean, he is. I think he look, you said the best player you've ever seen is Jordan. I think LeBron does more.
He does.
It's a different league.
But he doesn't do it as well.
What? Oh, no, I think
he
actually...
But he doesn't do it. He does more, but I don't think he does it as well.
Okay. I think if all LeBron did was score, he could score 50 a game if he wanted to. But... He has to dribble. He has to pass. He has to do everything for that team. Jordan never had to do that. But that's just that's just me, right? The only time that Jordan ever did that was 85, 86, 86, 87, and we saw what he did. He scored 63 in a loss. So that's just my take. So I'm gonna pick the Warriors in seven and hope that the Cavs win. So all right. So I saw this on MLB.com this morning where Andrew McCutchen, way to go, Andrew McCutchen. Last night, the Pirates win, and there's a video of him giving his batting gloves to a couple of kids in the center field bleachers, center field stand, and you can see one of them. Look, I remember myself as a kid and being a huge fan of certain players, and this kid, you can make out the words that he's saying, "I love you. I love you so much." And to be that type of kid where you have the innocence of loving Major League Baseball players, not being not worrying about the cap, not worried about salaries and so forth and whether a guy's going to be a free agent. Look, McCutchen's that type of player. He gives back to the community. Hats off to Andrew McCutchen. And get better, David Wright, because the spinal stenosis that he's actually engaged in is very, very dangerous, and I hope that he gets better and becomes one of those players again. Seth, it's up to you.
Well, I guess I'm going to go from one more solemn to one. Well, I only have a minute. So best of luck also to Leah Still, Devin Still's daughter, who I guess there were more ramifications from her cancer treatment. And it's nice to see everyone who, you know, wishing her well and kind of reaching out to her in that regard. And it's kind of hard to kind of segue into this, but what's this weekend?
Your bachelor party.
How did you? There you go. It is my bachelor party weekend. I don't really know what's going to happen. I know we're taping a show either Saturday or Sunday on the road, either there or back. It should be interesting. We're going to a Yankee game on Friday. Hope to see a bunch of guys there. I don't know what's going on Saturday because I have purposely stayed in the dark for it because it's just better that way. But, you know, I want to thank my radio partner and best friend for putting it together, and hopefully it'll be a good time.
There you go. Hold on.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
See y'all.
Have a good weekend.